Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, I'm Jacob Feldman.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the What's Old is New Again sports business podcast, The Sportacast. Jacob Feldman, our returning champion, really excited to have you here today. Scott is traveling back from the Super Bowl, not able to join us. And honestly, better that way. If Scott and I tried to talk about this topic, I think it would not go nearly as well as it is having you here. Some huge news that broke on Tuesday evening, or afternoon rather, depending on where you are. A tie-up between Disney, ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery is creating a streaming sports bundle of sorts. There's no name, there's no price, we don't have many details, but I am excited to learn from you, and I think our listeners probably are also. I want to hear everything, but let's start with your top line thoughts. I was shocked when this news came. There's no secret the challenges that the streaming world and sports media world is having right now. This was not on my bingo card of possibilities, but give me your gut reaction when you saw the news yesterday.
We did it. It's over. Streaming wars behind us. The great powers have sat down in the halls of Versailles. They've figured it all out. No more worries. No more getting texts from parents and uncles asking how to watch things. No more getting complaints about I don't remember my password. No more trying to figure out who's logged into my ESPN Plus account somewhere around the world. that was it. And then I read the details and I was like, maybe not.
so what in the details, what did you see that walked you off of this being kind of the start of the great panacea again for sports fans?
We can walk through it. So I think the biggest questions as you start to get into the details are what are you getting and how much is it going to cost, right? So on the what you're getting front, as you mentioned, it's those three companies. It's their sports-related channel. So the expectation here is that this is going to include ABC and Fox, the traditional broadcast channels, in addition to every cable channel that sometimes have sports. So TBS and TNT don't always have sports, but the expectation is that they'll be part of this bundle as well because sports are a driving factor for their rights fees for everything else. So you're getting 14 channels is I believe what that comes out to when you add up all these different channels. And you're not getting CBS's channels, primarily CBS and CBS Sports. You're not getting NBC's channels, which USA is now where a lot of their sports air on cable. You're not getting any local channels, so your Yes's, your MSG's, your Bally Sports on down the line. And you're, as of yet, not getting NFL Network, MLB Network, Tennis Channel, NHL. So this is not a full all-in-one, all-you-can-eat buffet sports streaming service of your dreams, right? This is a much closer to, we've seen Sling, right? Comes out with a couple different packages at different price points, different options. We've seen YouTube TV. We got a base price. You can add certain sports things. To me, this sits somewhere between those, and we can get to the price point in a second here. But this product is for somebody who wants to watch sports, ideally sports that Fox, Warner Brothers, and ESPN have the rights to, but doesn't want to pay the full cable bundle, which generally probably means you don't really care about news, you don't really care about kids' entertainment, and then some of the lifestyle reality stuff. I think are the other kind of key temples at this point of the cable bundle that you're okay forgetting, and maybe you're saving $10, $20, $30 by getting rid of that.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe.
It's so interesting. One of the things you and I have talked about this before, but the modern streaming era, it stands out to me just in how bad it seems to be for almost every participant in the process, right? For so long, the cable bundle was so incredibly good to companies like ESPN. They were getting paid twice. They were getting paid by essentially in the carriage fee department and also by advertisers. And they were bidding up the price of sports and bidding against each other, other companies that had similar economics. And it was great for teams, everything. And then as people started cutting the cord, we ended up in this world where things were not particularly cheaper. It was way more fractured. So sports fans were actually, I think, in a lot of ways more upset in this world. The economics yes, for companies yeah, like for Disney sure. totally evaporated. They were pushing people towards a streaming service that was hemorrhaging money. The good economics were disappearing because people are leaving. I know I'm oversimplifying here, but sure, we ended up in this world in the past few years where it was really bad for these companies and really bad for sports fans also, right?
Yeah.
And I do wonder if this is the start of a shift back towards things being better for sports fans. Seems like the easier case to make right now than this being some economic solve for a lot of the challenges that are coming from the disappearance of the cable bundle, unless you think I'm wrong.
But this does feel
good for fans for a start, at least, right? At least one piece of the system gets maybe
it's an
a
option.
Benefit.
Yeah, right. It's another option, right? Is what it is. So it'll be right for some people. It won't for other people. And that more options, I think, you know, on its face is always better for consumers. I do agree with you as well that this is a sign. I would say this is actually more of a reaction to things getting better for sports fans. Over the last 2 years, we've seen, after 5 years of rumors and speculation, we've seen the streaming giants, Amazon, YouTube, and Netflix, get interested in sports, right? So for a long time, they said, oh, these sports rights are too expensive. We don't need real live sports. We can do it with other programming. We can do it with user-generated commentary. We can put highlights on YouTube and we'll get people that way. Over the last couple of years, as they've looked to maintain the subscribers they built, look to reach new audiences, they're increasingly getting into sports. And UPTV, we can get into this, just announced that they have 8 million subscribers. It's become the largest of these virtual cable alternatives. And to me, I see what Disney, Fox, and Warner Brothers are doing as responding to those and saying, we don't want the sports hub, sports bundle, sports center, to use a too cute of a word, to live on Netflix or YouTube or Amazon or Apple. We want to be a key driver of this because we were a key driver in the last ecosystem. So this, to me, is a response to that. As much as anything else,
the new joint venture, whatever you want to call it, the new product, the companies announced they were all going to be 1/3 partners in it, which does not mean that all the economics are equal, and I'm sure the way that they share ad dollars is not going to be a third. Two of these companies are coming into this with NFL rights, which, as we talk about, is the most valuable thing on television or streaming period right now in America, it seems like. But I am curious how you think these companies are going to go about figuring out, we all own a third, but we're coming in here with very different rights and very different cost of those rights and very different years stability on those rights and different networks, as you laid out earlier. How do you think you go about deciding who's getting more of the money that comes into this thing moving forward?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. My understanding is, at least at launch, again, going back to thinking about this as another competitor to YouTube TV or Sling TV, that it'll work similarly. So each, as you know, in the bundle, each channel has a certain price that those distributors are paying per subscriber,
carriage
right?
fee, essentially.
Carriage
right?
fees, yeah. Exactly. So ESPN, just ESPN, the channel ESPN, I believe, is, Anthony Cooper knows these numbers more exactly, but I believe $12 per subscriber is what YouTube TV is paying Disney every time someone signs up for YouTube TV. So I believe they're going to use those numbers. So I think add up all of ESPN's networks, it's somewhere in the $20 range. Foxes are somewhere in the $8 range, and Warner's is somewhere in the, you know, $5 to $10 range, maybe $12 range as well, when you add up their network. So that's how you get into this $35 or $40 per month expectation that people have for how much is this going to cost. Then you add on, obviously, the technical expenses and the marketing fees, and you know, these companies want to turn a profit, so that's how you add another $10 onto that, and that's where you get these $50 expectations. So that's kind of the range we're talking in, and that's my expectation of how they're going to break these things up. And it is going to be fascinating to see as you mentioned, over time, how that all nets out and whether, you know, if it becomes clear that the football rights are all that matters, that those companies get a little more, or they actually need the spring and summer rights to maintain the subscribers. That is all going to be worked out. But first, they need to get people to sign up for the service. And the timing of this is also really interesting, right? So Fox announced their earnings report this morning. We're recording this just before Wednesday afternoon when Disney reports there. So this is all kind of tied into these massive businesses trying to pivot to this new world. And my sense is a lot of these smaller details are still being fine-tuned. And this is, it sounds like the Fox executives mentioned this morning, or Wednesday morning when you're listening to this, that this has been in the works for months, but still work to be done before an expected launch in the fall.
So I want to play a game with you real quick. Close your eyes. Imagine you are, I'm going to give you some names here, and I want to hear how you think they react to news like this.
Yeah.
Okay, you are Mark Lazarus, the chairman of NBC. You see this announcement come across NBC, obviously not part of this. Mm-hmm. What is your read on what this means for Comcast, for NBC, for NBC Sports?
Yeah, it's a challenge to Comcast, right? Because in addition to being a content owner, they're also one of these distributors. They're one of the biggest cable companies. And so in as much as this ends up increasing the pace of cord cutting, that's a massive challenge for them. I think the flip side, you know, the case they're probably, you know, managing up right now is that, hey, people are moving in this direction anyway. This is mainly a cord never product. That's how the Fox executives pitched it on Wednesday morning to their investors. This, you know, the 60 million people who don't have cable, if they sign up for this, then maybe they're also going to need Peacock, right? The NBC streaming product. And so then Peacock can maybe maintain more of a direct relationship and be more of an add-on, whatever, however you think about it. That's what you see. But I mean, your first reaction is always going to be FOMO, right? You're being left out of this thing. And what's that mean for you?
Okay. Now you're Adam Silver. Your NBA is in talks right now with some of these very companies and some others.
Yep.
You care very much about competition for sports rights more broadly. Is this and what it portends for the future good for the NBA and other premium rights holders? Is it bad? Is it a wait and see? What's your gut there?
Again, I would say this is good. This is a sign that these companies still value sports. They're not going to just say, you know, sports don't really work in this economic environment. We're going to move to other stuff. We're going to spin off these companies, whatever. They're saying, we need to figure this out. This is critical to us. And the success of the service is going to hinge on the rights, right? And so in a sense, as these companies try to stand up sports alone, the sports rights become more important than ever because you're not bundling it into Fox News and the Disney Channel and all these other channels as well. So to me, I know there was some speculation that, oh, these companies now don't need these rights as much because they're bundled together. This is still going to be a very small slice of the pie for the foreseeable future.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And I think this is just going to be another way that they can justify continuing to spend more, is my expectation for the next year. If I'm a sports right holder, this is great news.
So one more. If you are, let's say you're a big Walt Disney investor, the stock bumped a little bit. ESPN is obviously critical to Walt Disney's business and always a rumor or a thought about possibly spinning it off. ESPN has talked a lot about going direct to consumer. It has not done it directly yet. Does this affect the plans there? What do you think this means for outside of this joint venture, what ESPN's kind of role in sports media continues to be?
Yeah, I think it's a great toe in the water for them, right? To see what the interest is in a direct-to-consumer product that includes the ESPN networks without having to go all the way and without having to go all the way, having it flop, and then investors are like, oh, what are we left with, right? So this is a way to kind of go halfway. If it doesn't work out, they can say, hey, we're going to do ESPN direct to consumer next year. It's going to be cheaper. We're going to market it better. You know, it kind of gives you a fallback plan, I think, if this doesn't work well, is how I imagine they're thinking about this to some degree. But it doesn't solve the underlying issues that you're competing on one hand with Amazon, Apple, and Netflix, who have massive amounts of money, increasing growing of number of subscribers, who feel like they don't need ESPN because they have entertainment. And then on the other hand, you have these leagues that you're trying to negotiate with who are asking for more money than ever, in part because of these tech competitors, and you have fewer and fewer subscribers to work with. So that's the massive problem. This doesn't solve that problem. I don't know if that problem can be solved.
One of the interesting things I think about thinking about these three companies is just how different they treated streaming in the past 5 years. That ESPN started ESPN Plus, did not do the DTC thing as we're talking about, but started ESPN Plus and really made a push towards growing that, paying a lot for rights for it, even though it was losing money in the short term. Fox, opposite. Fox was essentially notoriously did not even do the streaming thing at all, right? And there are people that thought they were crazy. There are people that think it was genius, and I want to get your thoughts on that. And then in the middle there, Warner Brothers Discovery, which is going through the big merger acquisition of the past few years, had Bleacher Report Live, Bleacher Report Plus. What was the name of it?
BR Live.
Integrated into the new HBO app. Kind of the ESPN on one side diving directly in, Warner Brothers Discovery dipping a toe in the water, and Fox staying away from it entirely. Now that we have a better glimpse of one of the futures of their sports products, does one of these things look like a better approach? Do you think, is the Fox approach better? Is the ESPN approach better? What do you think looking back now?
Fox's approach is the cleanest, right? Which you have to appreciate, I think. They had a stance on the cable bundles where we make all our money. And again, Fox News is the most popular cable channel by viewing hours, I believe, or ESPN might be right there depending on the month. But so that they've always been tied into that. And so they've said, we don't want to compete with that. That's where our money is made. You know, we're going to lean into live sports on Fox more than ever and in terms of cutting other programming. And this does give them an option because it's been really interesting. I don't subscribe to cable. So for me watching,
when did you cut
Fox,
the cord? What year? Did they lose you?
Well, I used to be a YouTube TV subscriber if you count that. And then I dropped that when they dropped MLB Network, at the beginning of the baseball season. I said, if I'm not getting that, what am I getting?
Gotcha.
And then I was curious to see this football season, what it was like. And Fox was in many ways the hardest games to watch, right? Cause I had, Peacock for the NBC games. I had Paramount for the CBS games. You get ESPN Plus for the Monday Night Football games. And Fox doesn't have that streaming option. So this gives them that, which I think is massive for them going forward. You know, the price point, again, is probably going to be too high to get people in the door for just a Caitlin Clark Iowa game on a Saturday night, is my guess. But maybe if you're a college football fan, you're going to need this. So that, I think, makes a lot of sense. The Warner Brothers Discovery, as you mentioned, is really interesting. You know, my sense from the outside there is that they're looking to monetize or capitalize on these rights any way possible. You know, they're sharing content with Netflix. They're like, hey, you guys are doing a sports bundle. Yeah, here's our sports stuff. Pay us if people come in, have at it. They've also delayed that sports edition, charging people extra for sports on HBO Max. And maybe this is part of that too. ESPN is the big one that you mentioned. ESPN Plus, I would say, was a massive success compared to my expectations in terms of the number of people who signed up, getting UFC, making that into, if you're a real sports fan, you basically need ESPN Plus at this point, I think. Maybe there's a few pockets, a few sports where you can get away without it. But this, it's made it messy now, right? Where that ESPN Plus, the assumption is going to be included as part of this bundle. So maybe what you're doing is just moving people from paying $12 a month for ESPN Plus to $40 a month for everything, which is great. And maybe that's the direction they go in, but it is messy. And at some point they're gonna have to sit down and say, what's our strategy? We have to make everything available and what price point can we do it and not destroy the business that we have.
One of the interesting conundrums I feel like of this industry is that it's kind of impossible to iterate or innovate without cannibalizing the legacy part of your own business, right? And at least in view through that lens, Fox, as you said, I think clean might be the right word here, comes out the cleanest, right? They're not cannibalizing their own streaming service to do this, right? It's not. And I am curious what you think the effect this has on ESPN Plus's subscribers, right? And I assume these things are going to stay standalone in addition to this? Do they disappear
as
standalones?
Yeah.
So if they kind of run in parallel tracks, I assume a lot of ESPN Plus subscribers are going to jump to whatever this new thing is because they want all the sports at a lower price point. But is there risk here for these companies of losing out on better economics of standalone versus bundling them? Or I mean, obviously it's a consideration, but I do wonder about that as well.
I think at this point, the standalone economics are just not there, right? Like, I don't, unless you're Netflix, right? Netflix being the exception that proves the rule. And Netflix, in many ways, is becoming its own bundle, right? Like, they're bundling in games, they're bringing you live, they're bringing you movies. Like, they're trying to be their own bundle. And for everybody else, I don't think the economics are there standalone. And that's how it's going to be. It's just too hard to get people to sign up, to stay, to pay money when there's so much other content out there that's cheaper.
So just to unpack that for a second. So the way bundle pricing, at least the way I understand it, is these things will be cheaper as a group of three than they ostensibly would have been separately. So for
But you have to buy all three.
So for all of these, for each individual, they are lowering the price of their product. But you're saying the argument is just that the way more people buy this product, the addressable market becomes way bigger, and as a result, the economics in the bundle are better for them than the solo economics, which, as you said, are actually fundamentally just not working right now.
Yeah, I think that's the hope. Yeah. And again, I don't expect, you know, YouTube TV has 8 million subscribers. I don't think the numbers are out there. I think League Pass, MLB, these kind of league services are probably less than that in the 3 to 5 million range. That would be, to me, you know, not 60 million, but 6 million would be my guess on where this kind of nets out. Like, it's not a massive number of people, but it's as the Fox folks said, it's accretive, right? It's just extra. It's just 6 million extra people who weren't signing up for cable. Maybe that 6 million comes from people who had ESPN Plus, but again, Fox and WBD don't have that sports standalone. So it's just extra. And so that's how I think they would be looking at it from the economic point of view.
I got another close your eyes for you. If this group came to Jacob Feldman, the executive search firm, and we're like, we need somebody to run this business.
Yeah, right.
If you have specific names, great. But who do you? What is the profile of the? Do you want a legacy TV cable executive? Do you want a new media? Do you create some kind of cabal of executives from all three of these to vote as a triumvirate? I'm curious how you think leadership of this group goes, given how many balls are in the air.
Yeah, and that, you know, we talked about the price question and the product question. I think the leadership question is maybe the one we'll get answered first, hopefully. You know, the first name that comes up for people yesterday, as people were talking about, is Jason Kilar, right, who used to run Hulu, which is in many ways similar to this business, in that it was a conglomeration of multiple entertainment companies pooling some of their product
originally
services,
was,
their rights.
Right?
Yeah. Originally, right, and is slowly turning away from that vision, yeah. Which, you know, maybe portends how this will go. We shall see. But that's the name that comes up because it is, as you mentioned, it's going to be a lot of managing up, because this is going to be overseen by the executives of Fox, Warner Brothers, and ESPN Disney. So you're going to have to manage their expectations while trying to get consumers on board. So yeah, my first thought would be somebody who has experience with that kind of situation. And then it would be somebody who runs a streaming service, whether that's, you know, the folks in charge of Peacock Sports, whether that's the folks at Netflix at the higher end, whether it's somebody from Amazon or Apple, who understand how you sell a streaming service, how you build a streaming service. Because that I think we haven't touched on the tech, the distribution, and the marketing aspects of this, but I think those will be as important as anything. YouTube TV is a massively marketed service, right? They sponsor the NBA Finals, the World Series. They're everywhere. The Sunday Ticket deal is largely a YouTube TV marketing deal in many ways. You have to really put this out in front of people, make it clear what it is, why they should want it. You know, the number of sports fans, again, that are dying for this kind of product and are going to sign up day one, I don't think is massive. And so I would be looking for somebody who thinks they can put the story together for sports fans of why they need this product compared to the so many other options, one of which is just tuning out sports.
That's interesting. It seems to me like a bundled service makes the marketing in some ways easier, right? Like another one of the benefits of bundle economics is that you have three huge media companies who are equally incentivized,
we'll see how much they push
perhaps,
it.
Or all incentivized in some capacity to market a single product. And that actually feels
interesting, right? Is this going to be marketed on Fox during Michigan, Ohio State in the fall? Like, maybe not. I don't know. And that is a question that they'll have to, again, that goes back to kind of the managing up and down of just how much priority they're going to put on this. And I think that remains to be seen and sorted out. And we can start, as we start to hear executives talk about how this came together and what their vision is, I think we'll get a sense of who has kind of more eggs in this basket.
I want to go back to actually something you said a couple minutes ago, because I hadn't thought about it. This is very much the original Hulu business model, right? It was a kind of a combination of IP and assets from a bunch of different companies. And as you said, they've gotten away from, I don't know exactly, has Disney bought out Comcast stake or is about to?
They're in the process of negotiating that.
But yeah. Hulu moved away from that business model. Is there something we should take from that story that this was a model that was tried and then shifted away from by Disney and Hulu? Or is it apples and oranges and not even worth kind of pulling those threads?
No, I think the similarities are there and they are interesting. So Hulu, you know, like you said, was largely on-demand content at launch. They've since added a live TV product. But yeah, the idea was we have all these shows, Saturday Night Live, your sitcoms, all the shows people used to watch on TV when people watch TV. And what do we do with them? And we could just give them all to Netflix. But I think they saw that had some risks. And so like, oh, we'll just build our own service. We won't worry about the back end. We can all kind of pool resources. So that was that. And so, yeah, there is a world where in 3 years, you know, the reason that fell apart is every company said, oh, actually, we want to do this ourselves, particularly, you know, Peacock, which was a big, Comcast was a big backer of that and decided we'd rather build our own service. And Disney Plus has obviously built their own service. And so it became no one's kind of primary thing and it fell away. And so we'll see if that is the case here. And I wouldn't be surprised if in 2 years there is, you know, we're back to a world where ESPN is $10, Fox is $10, Warner Brothers Discovery is $10, and you can buy any number of them, but they'd rather own the relationship than be in a bundle. It's really difficult business-wise to keep everybody happy together. But if the outside looming threat of Netflix or Amazon or YouTube is big enough, maybe they can work together.
Let's talk about fans for a second. I imagine that when this launches, I will probably be a subscriber. One of the things that has frustrated me the most about losing cable, it's not trying to figure out where to watch things. It's like the inability to watch things simultaneously. And I'm not breaking any new ground here. Yeah. People complain about this all the time. But if there's two sporting events on and one of them is I want to watch on ESPN Plus and the other one is only available on, let's pick another one, BR Live, let's just say for the sake of the conversation, the time it takes to switch between those two things is not an insignificant amount of time. And it's not like on commercials, bounce back and forth between plays. It's actually a significantly worse experience. I am hopeful and I would expect, but if this, depending on how seamlessly they integrate all three of these groups' assets into one platform, that to me is one of the huge benefits that sports fans will get, is an easier way to cross-platform watch. Not necessarily, but also learning about what's on what, but more importantly, in my opinion at least, being able to do things simultaneously in a way that right now is prohibitive or too difficult.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. And again, I agree the experience part is going to be critical here. But I would just go back to, but let me first start with taking that question on face value, which I agree with. And ESPN has done a tremendous job, I think, in the UI on their app, in my opinion. You know, I have an Apple TV, so I can watch up to 4 ESPN streams at once. They generally know what I want to watch. It's pretty well recommended. You know, the quality is good, all that good stuff. So if they're building it on that backbone, building in some of the live, you know, my expectation is this will be like channels, right? So you're opening the app, you're picking channels. And so if they have the ability to watch multiple channels at once, it's really difficult, right? YouTube TV is experimenting with that. You still can't choose which multi-stream experience you want. They kind of have a preset option of these two games or these four games. And so that's a technical challenge, but something that should exist in a year's time. And then there's the guide aspect to it too. But this kind of gets to the point of it's not going to have all the games, right? So many sports fans, their main allegiance is to the local team that they're watching on their local network. And so in some ways, this just adds another kind of option to juggle between. And so this is really a platform problem. And this is a problem that's going to be solved, in my opinion, by Roku, Amazon, or YouTube, or possibly Apple. Those are the places where you are actually watching TV, right? So if this product, this not all-in-one streaming sports streaming service, is available on YouTube, right, or YouTube TV, right? You know, you can buy YouTube TV or you can buy YouTube TV Sports, right, or whatever they, you know, whatever name they want to call this. and you're built into an existing distribution process and exist like that, to me, I think will be have a higher chance of succeeding. Or even when you look at, you know, Roku is building with sports hubs, this is going to be built into a larger, at some point it's the distribution platform's job, I think, to solve this exact problem. And that, again, is going to involve getting everybody to play on the same team, which is going to be really, really, really difficult.
Are you one of these psychos that watches four sports games at once?
Yeah, you don't. You're
I'm a single stream on mute, typically.
And what do you do during the commercials? You just sit
there? Yeah, I mean, I'm most of the sports I watch while doing something else on my computer or my phone or just in my apartment. But yeah, I mean, the because bouncing back and forth is so difficult. But I think if I had four games up on a single screen, I would be unable to follow a single one of them, let alone multiple. I didn't even know that was an option. I watch most of my stuff on Fire Stick, and maybe this is an option on Fire that I don't even know. The ESPN Plus that I use on that, I don't think you have that option.
I believe it's just Apple TV for now. And my preferred way of watching oftentimes is with some sort of whip around show showing all the games. So again, going back to my love of MLB Tonight on MLB Network, having that up and then also having the game I'm watching, right? And so I'm kind of keeping an eye on the league, and then I'm watching my one game. Same with Red Zone, which again is another, for now, absent name here, but folks will remember there was all that conversation about the ESPN and the NFL media potentially coming together. That maybe makes some more sense here if you're thinking about ESPN executives seeing a way to add Red Zone to this product. Becomes a lot more compelling potentially. That's my preferred method, but it is difficult, and that's one of the really frustrating things about being a sports fan. Is you can't have a habit, a way of watching things, because my way of watching NHL and ESPN is great. It's all right there. My way of watching football is juggling between all these services and keeping Red Zone open on my phone. My way of watching basketball varies based on the night, based on whether they have the whip around show available. My way of watching tennis is often not watching tennis because it's on $100 a year tennis subscription that I don't have. Like that's life, and this is going to make it a little better for a few people, but it's still going to be that way.
Staying on this topic, in a world where this group expands beyond these three things, do you see it more likely as we're bringing NBC into the fold, or do you see it more likely as we're bringing Tennis Channel into the fold, or we're bringing NFL Network, something that is way more specific and smaller? Which of those do you think is a more likely scenario in the shorter term?
I think the latter is more likely, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it be an add-on option, which is what YouTube TV, how they handle it, right? You know, $40 a month, you get these three, you get 14 channels. Every additional channel is $5, whether you want MLB or NHL or NBA or NFL or tennis or your local, maybe your local one is, because that's the other part we haven't got into is, you know, these local teams are also largely going direct to consumer at kind of a $15 to $20 a month price point. So you take your 40 for this, you add 15 for that, you add six more for Peacock because you watch European soccer. So I think if they all work together on a platform where you can jump between them and you know what's on or you know where it is, and it's a fun way to watch sports, that's reasonable. I don't mind paying $70, $80 a month for sports if you can give it all to me in a reasonable package. And that's what YouTube TV was and could be. That's what this potentially could be as well.
For sports fans out there who, when this launches, and you seem to be saying something in the $40 to $50 range, that seems consistent with what most people seem to be saying. I think there are sports fans out there who are going to look at that and say, my local RSN, let's say Nesson, let's say they're up in your world, right? It's $30 a month for Nesson. And it's $40 a month for all of ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brother Discovery's, all their assets. Explain to sports fans why the local economics and the national streaming economics are just so very different in terms of what these things cost.
Sure. The key factor with these regional deals to date is that they don't want to upset their cable distributors too much. You know, they don't want to offer this for $10 and then it's harder to get carriage on their cable distributors that are paying them $8 per subscriber, including a lot of subscribers who don't pay for sports, who don't watch sports but pay for it rather, which is the key distinction. So that is, I think, again, they're making this option available, but they don't want this to be too popular. And so that's why I think this could be interesting in an add-on way, where maybe it's a smaller market of saying, if you have this national package, we'll give you Nesson for $10 or $8 or $15. They may be forced into that world over time as the cable bundle falls apart. But you know, it's also just, you know, you're building the same product but for a smaller group of people because of these regional distribution limitations, right? You can only watch Nesson in a certain period of certain part of the country. So that makes it more difficult to make money compared to if you're Fox, you can show it nationwide, you can show ads nationwide. It's just, you know, it's easier to pool viewers that way as well. And that, again, goes back to what we were saying before about standalone just being a really, really tough economic model.
We're running out of time here, but you at one point mentioned that we hadn't gotten into the technical aspects here. Is there something that I don't even know to ask that you think is particularly interesting about who builds this or kind of what the back end relationships look like that might be interesting for sports fans out there?
No, I think a lot of that remains to be seen. I believe in the release they said they're all going to pool together and work on this. Again, Disney has a massive streaming tech part of their business already. They bought what was MLB Advanced Media to build the backbone of ESPN Plus almost 10 years ago now. And so these companies know how to do it. You know, HBO Max and Discovery have plenty of technical know-how. Fox owns Tubi. There is tech know-how in these buildings. It'd be interesting to see, you know, who they put on these projects and build them. And I am curious if this is just going to be, you know, just another app, or somehow built into, you know, something else, or how hard it is going to be to access. One of the things I'm most curious about is the password sharing element of this, because it kind of goes unsaid in all these pricing conversations. If this is an account that I can share with four people, then it becomes a lot easier to sell, right? $100 a year is very different than $40 a month. And so that is going to be interesting. ESPN and Disney have been fairly lax on the password sharing front over time. I think that's tightening now, but that is going to be another, I think, crucial element that often goes unsaid when we're talking about pricing. But that, again, it's just like all these companies have slightly different thoughts on the best way to go about these things. It's going to be really, really interesting to see who wins out for this one.
What is the prevailing thought on password sharing? To end the show, because I am very guilty of this. I am sharing a lot of my own and other people's passwords.
Of course.
And it seemed like for a while this was essentially like a bring people in and then bait and switch kind of thing. And the longer we go where people don't seem to care about it, the more I wonder if the switch ever happens or if it's just a lot of bait. I'm curious if the way the market thinks about when and if to switch over has changed at all in the last few years, or if the numbers aren't.
Yeah, it's moving. It's moving for sure. You know, Netflix is cracking down on this, and Wall Street has responded fairly positively. And so I think that's going to be a message to everybody else. Like you were saying, it's just kind of that secret button that all these executives have in the bag. Like, oh, we need 5% more subscribers. Let me hit that button. Boom. We'll convert them, and our numbers will be great. So but you know, you don't know exactly what it'll be. So it's kind of a mystery box for now. So that you can say, you know, to advertisers and everybody else, you know, we have all these subscribers that don't show up in our numbers. So it is a financial decision for them. And then because we're 30 minutes into a conversation about streaming, there's the whole piracy angle of this too, where that to some degree is not enforced as strictly as it could be, in part because people know that people watch that way and become fans that way and then maybe move to the other product. So these, again, it's all political and it's all, you know, there's models to figure out some of this stuff, but a lot of it is personality and emotion. And that's what makes this all so fascinating.
Well, this has been great, Jacob. I learned a lot from this. I think our listeners probably did too. I would never say I'm glad Scott's not here, but if there was one show for him to miss, I think the one breaking down this one was a good one. He is Jacob Feldman. He is Sportico's new media, new tech, all the cool stuff reporter. You can find him on Twitter at JacobFeldman4. I am Eben Novi Williams. You can find me on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Aaron Greenewald. Thank you very much to Aaron. Sportico's digital media editor Cora Veltman would like you to know that you can follow the show at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.